Come on, Daniel, for Christ's sake, you're like an old granny walking in the park.
3 times a week, at 7 a.m, training for 1 hour. Count yourself lucky. The senior team trains every morning, and Saturdays too. Breaststroke, backstroke, butterfly, crawl, back and forth through the blue chemicals. Repetitions on the tiles, crunches and squats, till every muscle is burning.
Being a great athlete is not just about natural ability.
Coach likes to shout, pacing up and down alongside the poolside as you squirm through your sets.
It's about discipline, and it's about commitment. So if you miss a session, you'd better have a good excuse.
Afterwards, the team huddles shivering by the doorway of the changing room, hands pressed under armpits. When you get out of the water, the air feels cold and nothingy. Your arm moves, and it moves against nothing. You speak, and the words disappear instantly. Coach wraps and unwraps the cord of the whistle around his hand. Everyone gathered round him, like the apostles with Jesus in old paintings. If you look closely, you can see how his body's all twisted up, even when he's standing still.
You lads did good work on Saturday, but we can't afford to rest on our laurels. The next meet is on 15 November. That might sound like a long way away. All the more reason for us to work hard and keep our momentum going. I want to see us in the semi-finals.
He tosses his head towards the changing room.
Okay, off you go.
The showers never feel like they're making you clean. The tiles are lined with scuzz. The foot bath, half full of brackish water. Hair shivers in grey clumps in the grating, like drowned mermaids.
You swam like a turd today, Justa,
Siddhartha says.
What's the story? Were you up late last night bumming Van Doren?
Skippy mumbled something about pulling a muscle at the meet. Siddhartha wrinkles up his nose, sticks his upper teeth over his lip, and makes the kangaroo noise.
I think I pulled a muscle at the meet. Well, you'd better speed up. Just because you fluked through on Saturday doesn't mean you've got a right to a permanent place on the team.
Don't mind him,
Ronan Joyce says, when Siddhartha turns round.
Dickhead.
But Skippy doesn't mind him. The pill he took when he woke up takes care of that. The sleepy feeling threads through him, wrapping around him like a blanket. Noises, images, the things people say, come to him all broken up and slowed down. The needly water of the shower, hitting his body, turning from cold to hot, he hardly notices, nor when he steps out again into the freezing changing room. Ruprecht and the others are already eating by the time he gets to the refectory. Monstro is behind the counter, ladling scrambled eggs like some kind of giant infection from a steel vat. The food in the ref is always gross, the cheapest stuff they can get. Today, even the toast is burnt. Crowd cheering noises from Jeff as he sits down.
This is very exciting, sports fans. We've just been joined by champion swimmer Daniel Juster, direct from his grueling training regime. How are you feeling today, champ?
Sleepy. A chorus of baaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaa Iraq's biggest bogger and self-alleged linchpin of the clandestine Real IRA Juniors, Dublin Brigade, enters the room.
Skrrk! Skrrk!
Ruprecht meticulously scrapes the burnt from his toast.
Sleepy. That's top athlete Daniel Skippy Juster, ladies and gentlemen.
Skrrk! Skrrk!
Goes Ruprecht's toast. Skippy stares into his breakfast as if it's appeared out of nowhere.
I could probably be a top athlete if I wanted to,
Mario puts in carelessly.
It's just that I don't want to.
Oh yeah, Mario. That's why,
Dennis says.
Up yours, Howie. That is why. For your information, this summer two different premiership teams rang me up to offer me trials.
The premiership of masturbating?
Dennis says.
If there was a premiership of masturbating, you would be David Beckham.
Niall adds. Seizing an imaginary microphone, Dennis adopts a limp, estuary accent.
Masturbating's changed a lot since I were a lad, Brian. In my day, we masturbated for the sheer love of it. Day and night we did it. All the kids in our estate masturbating on the old waste ground, masturbating up against the wall of the house. I remember me mam coming out and shouting, "Stop that masturbating and come in for your tea. You'll never amount to anything if all you think about is masturbating." Masturbating crazy we were. Your young masturbators today, though, it's all about the money. It's all about agents and endorsements. Sometimes I worry that the masturbating's in danger of being squeezed out altogether.
Hey, Skip. What was the hotel like on Saturday?
Jeff asks.
Did you have a minibar?
No.
Was there a hot tub?
Jesus, Ruprecht. What the hell are you doing? Skippy rounds on him.
Burnt toast is a carcinogen.
Ruprecht replies placidly, continuing his excoriation.
A what?
Says Jeff.
It gives you cancer.
Toast gives you cancer?
Mario says.
Giving us cancer would actually be a step up for this place.
Dennis says, looking around splenetically at the ref.
Carcinogen.
Jeff repeats slowly. Goes the knife on the bread. Then Skippy grabs Ruprecht's plump wrist. He looks up in surprise. It's annoying, Skippy says, embarrassed. The bell goes. Potato Head Toms rises and claps his hands for them all to carry their trays over to the trolleys. I just have to get something from my locker, Skippy tells the others. It's 8:42. The corridors are full of puffy-eyed boys in coats, hurrying to check in. News of Saturday's swim meet has spread. As he makes his way against the tide to the basement steps, people he's never spoken to are nodding to him in acknowledgement. Others punch him on the arm or stop to say congratulations.
Hey, well done on the other night, Juster.
Here, heard about your race. Nice one, man.
Good job, Juster. When's the semi-final?
If you're used to people looking past or through or most often over you, then the attention is pretty strange. Now two guys from the low streams, Darren Boyce and someone else whose name Skippy isn't even sure of, break free from the shoals to approach him. Darren is smiling and holding out his arms. Then at the last minute, he shoves his friend so he clatters into Skippy and sends him crashing into the wall. They laugh and move off in the other direction. He picks himself up, the toast sound echoing through his head again. Skrik, skrik, skrik. The pill's already wearing off. Shh, I know. Calm down. Down the steps, through the waves of bodies. When he came back from summer holidays this year, the boys had changed. Suddenly, everyone was tall and gangling and talking about drinking and sperm. Walking among them is like being in a B.O.-smelling forest. The basement is crammed with narrow aisles of lockers. They remind Skippy of coffins, cheap wooden coffins with combination locks. To one side, there's a patched pool table, on which Gary Toulon is crisply, blondly annihilating Edward Hutch Hutchinson, while Noddy the janitor looks on, leaning on his broom, cackling approvingly. A few doors up from Skippy, a small group has gathered furtively around Simon Mooney's locker, indicating the presence of contraband.
Atomizers, black holes, fifth dimensions, sizzlers.
Simon Mooney is reciting, poring over a plastic bag.
Then we have rockets, bangers. These are like the loudest bangers you've ever heard.
What's this one?
Dermot Coveney points.
Don't touch.
Simon whisks the bag primly out of reach and reopens it at a safer distance.
That, my friend, is the infamous spider bomb. 8 individual fireworks in one.
There is a murmur of awe and appreciation.
Where'd you get them?
Dewey Fortune asks.
My dad bought them in the north. He goes up there all the time on business.
Wow. Do you think he could get me some?
Vaughan Brady suggests breathlessly. Simon considers this with a drawn-together mouth, like he's sucking a sweet.
No.
Well, how about you sell us some of yours?
Simon does the sweet face again.
No.
Why not? You got loads.
Can we at least set a couple of them off now?
Come on. Think of what Connie'd do if you let off a banger under his chair.
No.
Well, what did you bring them in for if you're not going to set one off?
Simon shrugs, and then, noticing Carl Cullen and Barry Barnes lurking in the vicinity, hastily stuffs the fireworks back in his locker and snaps shut the lock. The circle reluctantly disband and head towards the stairs as the final bell goes. Skippy closes the door of his locker and leans back against the door. Skrrk, skrrk, skrrk. Hot tub, minibar. Sweat drips down his back. Everything's moving in jumps and rushes, like the moments are connected by water slides, and each time he blinks, he's hurtled out into a new one, not knowing where he is. Shh, take it easy. And little particles of memory appearing out of nothing, and exploding like fireworks against the inside of his eye. Little sparks of images that are gone too quick to see. Like dreams are gone the second you realize they're dreams. But dreams of what? Memories of what? Shh. Deep breaths. He takes out the amber tube and swallows a pill with some flat Sprite. Okay. Slowly and calmly, he takes the books he will need for the morning's classes from his locker and places them in his bag. He is late for science, but he does not hurry. Already, things are feeling more normal again. See? The pills, moving through you like sleep, like eating ice and feeling your insides freeze. Weird that the cure should just appear like that at the same time as the sickness.
Hold it right there,
Mr. Farley exclaims as Skippy comes through the door. He turns to the class.
Which of the 7 characteristics of life can we see Daniel exhibiting right now?
30 grinning eyes swivel onto him. Skippy stands there like an idiot with his hand on the door. There is some snickering and some shouted suggestions from the back of the room.
Excretion?
Gayness!
Before Mr. Farley steps back in.
Breathing is the answer. Oh yes, now you all know us. Breathing, or as it's known scientifically, respiration, is one of the 7 characteristics of life. Thank you, Mr. Juster, for that very elegant demonstration. You can take a seat now.
Skippy, blushing, hurries down to his desk beside Ruprecht.
Every living thing on the planet breathes,
Mr. Farley continues.
However, not everything breathes the same thing, or in the same way. For example, humans breathe in oxygen and breathe out carbon dioxide, but plants do the opposite. That's why they're so important in combating global warming. Aquatic organisms breathe oxygen, the same as humans, but they extract it from the water through gills. Some organisms have both gills and lungs. Can anyone tell me what these are called?
Flubber Cook puts up his hand.
Mermaids?
No. Anyone else? Thank you, Ruprecht. The correct answer is amphibians.
He turns to chalk it up on the board.
The word comes from the Greek amphibios, meaning double life. Amphibians, for instance frogs, are organisms that can breathe on land and in water. They're important in evolutionary terms because life on Earth began in the sea. So the first vertebrates to crawl out onto the land must have had amphibious tendencies. And each of you has a more recent amphibious past, because babies, when they are in the womb, actually breathe liquid oxygen through gills, just like fish.